Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running a design studio, and more, all for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Hi, I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, based in Southern California.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Overcast, Montclair, New Jersey, just outside of New York City.
Well, Overcast East Coast person, what's happening in your studio today? Let's just, everybody have a little round
of
discussion.
I said that because it was just beautiful yesterday. It was like 80 degrees and wonderful, and now we've
changed.
Yes. So I turned down a job this past week, which just was very relevant to our last podcast, I believe.
Or where's maybe my little no button? I need my no button.
It was two ago, I think we talked about when you turned down. But there was another red flag that came up that I don't think I talked about. I mean, there were a number of them. She called me at the last minute, had a bunch of projects, but you know, the most immediate ones were two presentations next week, including a TED Talk. And
You know,
everything she sent was not, it was talking points. They still needed to actually put together a presentation. But this was the red flag. She said, you know, we hadn't worked together. She was recommended by another client. So first she reached out and listed off this whole stuff of what she needed done, including I need a beautiful set of slides, amazing, wonderfully designed. And whenever I see a client say something like that, I usually end up not working with them because the implication is don't do what you normally do, or as though I have a choice between good work and bad work.
Bad work, right.
And it doesn't make any sense. So it's always an indication that they don't know what they want, or they want the moon. And in this case, and then of course, another red flag was after I said, you know, I'm sorry, a week is not enough turnaround for this, but you have others coming up. You mentioned, I'd be happy to talk about those. Never heard from her. So not even a, I understand, let me get back to you. So that's just, those were red flags. But next week I'm talking, or the week after, I'm talking to a group of anesthesiologists in New York City, which I've never spoken to doctors, I think. So, but it's about how to put together better presentations.
Well, good for you.
Is this the time where we talk about how they could, you know, don't fall asleep or don't let them put you to sleep?
Funny.
I'm sure there'll be a joke in there on that somehow. But I'm looking forward to that.
Well, you know what? I'll go with news because I said yes to a project. I just thought I'd play the opposite of you. it's actually happening in 2 weeks, which in our live show project schedule, that's like a crazy request to say, hey, are you available in like less than 2 weeks? Because, I mean, we're booked out throughout most of this year and well into 2018 for show site stuff. But there was a big green flag. One, it was
not a red flag.
Yeah, it's a big green. Actually, there's a couple of one. It's only a 2 day project, which is also kind of a rarity. So it was literally a no pre-production. It was just show up and be an on-site presentation specialist. And it's an existing client. We know the background, the history. We know most of the executives that'll be talking. We may have actually prepared most of their slides. We don't know. The second one is it's actually in San Diego, which again is actually a novelty. San Diego is a destination for meetings, but not this time of year. I mean, not springtime and summer. Everybody wants to go to the destinations that are nice during that part of the year. San Diego is a really big destination for wintertime when it's not so nice in other places. People are escaping New York in droves and Chicago. And so anyways, those, and even more amazingly, those 2 days were actually available on my personal calendar. So I said yes to a little quick project.
Well, that sounds fun. It sounds good that you can stay home. As a matter of fact, Nolan, I just got back from being out your way on Friday as a part of preparing for the keynotes for the conference that's May 1 through 3.
I assume it was an In-N-Out trip.
It was quick In-N-Out. Yep, In-N-Out. What we ended up doing, the CEO and the CMO brought together a group of New York clients, so including Macy's, New York & Company, Luxottia, those types of clients, did a dry run of their keynotes in front of these clients in order to get feedback. So before they go live in May, they wanted to hear what their audience would, how they would respond. And we got amazing feedback to the keynotes. It was really, really great.
That's great. Yeah. That's really novel, I think, to actually have companies now invest the time and the money, resources into doing full presentations. It's a real presentation, but they're doing it to gear up for the bigger event. And that's really awesome.
Exactly it. We sat in a conference room. There were only 9 people there, but it was the audience. It was a target audience. And I would suggest, if budgets allow, that this be done more and more.
So, question for you. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of derailing from, maybe it is part of our topic now that I think about it. But anyways, we'll get to the topic in a moment. So a lot of times I find that when we finally get with the executives and we're doing a slide rehearsal, it's more of a slide review and a content development time period. In other words, it's hard to get all the players together to actually agree upon the messaging and, somebody to actually look at all the financials and somebody to, from the internal branding to make sure everything's on brand. Most of these pre-meetings turn into less of a rehearsal and more of a, I'll just call it a working session. How did you find this? Was this actually truly a presentation where feedback was garnered after the presentation?
Yes. And I agree with you. All the practices that we've set up internally end up being exactly what you've just described. We end up tweaking slides, tweaking content. Somebody finally provides the screenshots that we're supposed to have, that type of thing. So all of the previously scheduled practices really have not been practices. So purposely, we left the site. We didn't want to waste clients' time or, the guests' time. So they did provide feedback on slides to a point, but really it was more content. And these two keynotes are the CEO's is first, the CMO is a second. They provided insight on how we might better tie those two together. It was just really a great working session.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Sounds like good clients.
Yep.
Very cool. Very exciting. We're all doing fun stuff. Yeah.
So what do we got in terms of news going on? I'll go first. there's a few things going on. There have been a few office updates. Designer, which is that cool feature that aims to put us out of business, is available now for PowerPoint on iOS. So that's the thing where you throw in some photos and text and PowerPoint pops up this panel that says, hey, do you want your slides to look like, these 5 or 6 options? And you can pick one and it sort of does the design for you. So it's an interesting feature, but that's available now on iOS.
So Nolan, I think they're doing a lot on the mobile version of PowerPoint, at least on the iOS side. I don't use the Android one as much and we test it periodically. So 2 things on that. One is, I will tease this out, that Designer is going to continue to improve. We've been asked as an entity to test some forthcoming features. So we're pretty excited about its future. And the second one is more about the mobility thing. And actually, I just had a blog post, what'll be last week. I don't remember the exact day. Maybe it was 2 weeks ago. You got a downloadable test. But anyways, here's the deal. Morph works on PowerPoint for iOS. So if you open up on your iPad or your iPhone, all the Morph playback works. And I actually had a download file. That's what we did, is we create a little internal test. And I decided to make it available to everybody so you could see Morph actually work on your phone. The platform keeps getting better and better for all uses.
Nice.
I think it works on Android as well.
Okay.
Yep. But I don't know if you can offer it. I know it plays back beautifully.
Just a total side note here, but I was just at a show site event, or no, I was actually at a corporate office where one of their internal designers showed me their new cell phone. And I wish I could remember who it was. It's Moto. Who makes Moto?
Motorola.
I can picture their little Motorola. Okay, well, that makes perfect sense. It has like clip-on backs to it. They had like this huge, it had like a stereo speaker that clipped onto the back. They had an extended battery that clipped onto the back. They had a projector. Have you seen this one?
I've seen the commercial, but I've never seen it in person.
They said, have you seen the commercial? I said, I don't really do TV. Who has time for that? But they had.
I guess no one has time.
Well, all they did was turn off the lights in the cubicle, and the projection was amazing. I mean, it was literally just this little, it was basically doubling the cell phone. It just doubled the thickness of it. Yeah, and it had a little kickstand. It was pretty darn bright. And what was really cool about going into technical, if you put it at an angle, so up at a wall, normally things will look all kind of cattywampus. It won't be a rectangle. It's called keystoning. It does auto keystoning to any angle. It was
auto
keystoning. Yeah, it would show this really harsh, distorted rectangle, and within less than a second, it would pop it into a perfect rectangle, no matter what angle you put it at. It was really, really
impressive.
But mobile and presentations, you could literally do a. They were demonstrating showing a video, a movie, but you could run a presentation from that in a small meeting space pretty efficiently. Mm-hmm. I hadn't even thought about it as news, and it might not be new news, but I just saw it. It was good.
No, it's cool. It's very cool. So, is that Android? Is Moto Android?
It was an Android phone. I know that, and it was the Moto one with little clip-on back-end things. And somebody had just gotten the movie projector. I mean, it's literally it was just tiny. It was pretty impressive. I wouldn't say it's going to run meetings, but the fact that you could run mobile PowerPoint versions, actually do real presentation work, and you could then show it as probably a small meeting. I don't know. It was pretty impressive.
Or just a very quick, let me share this with you, as opposed to like, let's crowd around my iPad or phone. I wonder how, bright.
Not a bright light. Yeah.
It's not. Yeah. So you have to turn the lights down a little bit.
We turn the lights off in a cubicle environment. So there's still other environments, but to turn them off of the wall of the cubicle, it was much brighter than I would have expected.
Mm-hmm.
Let's hear. I have a little news. And this is at least Microsoft news within our MVP communication. I don't know if this is being broadcast out there. It's not under NDA, so that's why I'm going to bring it up. But it's kind of an interesting one that in a recent communication cycle, Microsoft or somebody at Microsoft actually kind of admitted there is a problem, not a bug, but a problem with looping video. Now, this is a big deal because this just, to me, just stopped working. And we use looping video for walk-in elements. We use it, well, actually directly related to the topic today. I use PowerPoint as a video playback computer for a lot of different shows where it's kind of a specialty need. And looping just does not work. I actually really detailed this with a lot of examples back in February. And it wasn't really picked up on. And all of a sudden, somebody else noticed it. And we got the right person at Microsoft to say, yeah, we're actively looking into why looping playback may not be looping continuously. So that's a little news, and I think everybody should know about it, that if you're on Office 365 PowerPoint on the Windows side, I haven't checked on the Mac side, if you want to loop a video endlessly, it may not do it. It does like 3, 4, 5, maybe 10 times, and it just pauses.
It's random, isn't it? It just decides to stop.
Yeah.
Well, my news is Microsoft has decided to drop EPS support in PowerPoint. Yeah. And I believe that came with Friday's update. It's kind of funny. We received notice on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday it was gone. I'm on Slow Insider, so I don't know if it's out there for the masses, but I know that it's officially done on Slow Insider.
Oh, but it's only for Windows. That was a big note I caught out of it. The Mac side is going to continue to support EPS because the OS doesn't have the problem with the embedded virus scenario is what they're really worried about.
Thank you for bringing that up. Exactly. It's all done because of the potential virus issues in EPS on Windows.
Yeah. I think some big corporate client must have gotten stung and Microsoft is reactionary. Let's just pull it out so we don't have to deal with it. And nobody, never has to happen again. But it's a big deal. That EPS in presentation world is used a lot. I think it's used more on the Mac side. That's the only reason I referenced that because I did ask about that, but it's kind of a quick, no advance notice.
Nope.
So what's going to happen if you have an EPS image, which is just a file format for imagery, it will not display. It'll just show a big red X.
Not a red X. It's just a blank. On mine, it's a blank, an empty image with the text that says cannot display image.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You can open that up in a legacy version because legacy versions will continue to support it until I'm sure that gets updated. And you can open up a Mac and you can copy and paste it in as special and convert it. And isn't it supposed to do an auto conversion if possible? There was talk about if it was a vector format, it would turn it into an EMF, which may or may not be a good thing for the quality.
Isn't happening for me. I've experimented several times.
This is really cutting edge news. This just happened.
Yep.
And also very niche news too as well.
But, it is.
But for those who use it, it's an important thing to know about.
PowerPoint is an amazingly versatile application. The core focus of the application is on presentation slides, but it is used for so much more. Today, Nolan, Sandy, myself, we're sharing our top 10 uses for PowerPoint that are outside of developing presentation slides. Well, let's start off with one of my favorites, because we've done this for a long time, and Duarte Design put out an ebook. Well, I don't know what we call it, but they put out a presentation book about using PowerPoint for presentation work. And so we call them PowerPoint documents, but it's the idea that PowerPoint can be a print layout medium because it's a little bit more versatile than Word, a little bit easier than InDesign. It kind of is in between. Do either of you use it for this use?
Absolutely. I mean, I think we've talked a little bit about this. I do printed reports and printed presentations and documents and whatever you want to call it all the time in PowerPoint, and I've been doing it a lot more. And for my clients, it comes down to editability because, yes, nobody's going to deny that InDesign is a more full-featured, more powerful professional program for desktop publishing. Nobody's going to deny that Word is just a pain in the butt to use, you know, for that as well. So, but
it's
PowerPoint,
great. It's Word is great within a certain parameter, that which a typewriter could do.
Right.
Do you remember typewriters? Clickety click, click, click.
So PowerPoint steps into sort of this middle, and most of the time my clients choose it because I always give them the options, you know, hey, we need a report. I said, okay, we can do it in InDesign. It'll look beautiful. We can do this. We can do this. And they say, yeah, but I don't have it. And I said, or we can do PowerPoint, in which case we'll have to pull back on some of the design, make some compromises, but you'll be able to edit it at any point moving forward. You're not have to come back. You're not going to have to come back to me. You're not going to have to learn InDesign. And that usually makes the decision for them. So yeah, so we do it, you know, and we've done everything with it to basically hack and approximate InDesign, for example. You know, we've inserted bleed to send it to a printer. We've done spreads. We've done odd sizes. I did a square one. Really, just about everything to make it work like a true desktop publishing program. But that said, it obviously has big limitations. The biggest one being you can't string text from one. You can't thread text from one slide or one page to another. That's the big thing. So you really have to think in terms of page to page to page.
Yes. You know, to that point, I use PowerPoint for non-presentation things like financial pitch books, quarterly reports, advertising pitch leave behinds, that type of thing. For a while, when a client had the Office suite, it used to include Publisher. Perhaps it still does. But for a while, I did use Publisher because it did things like that, the wrapping, the what do you call it? Page wrapping, page rollover, that type of thing.
Text threading. Yeah.
Exactly. And so those clients were willing, as long as they had the Office suite and they could do edit, they could edit themselves, we use Publisher. But I have to say it's been maybe 3-4 years since I've even touched it.
You know, Publisher is still around, but it just doesn't seem to get much attention.
Okay, right? So I'm on my computer. I just typed in Publisher, which I have never launched on this computer. I do have Publisher 2016, obviously installed as part of the Office 365 suite. So I do have it installed on my computer. I didn't even know it. I don't know the last time I've even looked at it. Mm-hmm. But it was definitely going in the direction of kind of the InDesign PageMaker-esque world. It just, you know, it's hard to catch on, which is kind of surprising because Microsoft Office is installed everywhere.
Yeah, it's still there. Yeah, you're right. I mean, you know, are there Publisher MVPs?
That's, I don't know.
Yes. Yes, there are.
Okay.
But I cannot remember any. And again, it's been years, so I shouldn't say there are. There were.
We should look.
And, you know, I'm looking at some of the screenshots, and it kind of looks like PowerPoint in that you've got your pages down the left-hand side and obviously a very similar toolbar. Interesting. I learned stuff on the podcast too.
Well, we do lots of PowerPoint document. That's what we call it, PPT docs projects. You know, they're basically customized 8.5 by 11 templates. The final output is almost always a PDF. So we're not going to a true printer, maybe a laser printer or quick print. Offset printing, PowerPoint is still not going to be the best solution, in my opinion.
Oh, God. Because I wouldn't do that now.
It doesn't handle, it's a fixed resolution program. It doesn't actually output high resolution. So if you put a 300 DPI image in there, it doesn't really matter. Its output is still going to be limited to the page size. It
doesn't handle CMYK.
It does not handle CMYK. And now doesn't handle EPS as of a few a week ago. But the presentations are, the way I describe them is it's similar to what we do with InDesign. We're going to give people the ability to have custom layouts, but there are zero animations, zero transitions. And for the most part, we're going to probably strip out all the standard Microsoft presentation layouts because now it is being used for print style. I think a print design for us, or what we call PowerPoint documents, it's a big asset. It's a big factor in our offering and the number of projects we have in.
You know, I've never done it, but if you were going to a printer and there were certain things that needed to be like CMYK, you could probably do a lot of pre-flight fixing in Acrobat. If you're changing things in Acrobat, you probably should be just doing it in InDesign. But anyway, don't forget about the handouts. You know, we've been talking about,
yes,
you know, you can change the slide size to 8.5 by 11 vertical very easily. And that's what I do a lot. But you can also use the handouts version or handouts layout. I'm sorry, the notes layout PowerPoint in order to create handouts. So for example, I did a webinar a while back and they wanted a 10-page pre-read. And I wanted to do it vertically. My slides obviously were horizontal, and I didn't want an extra document just flying around to have to go back and forth. So all I did was create 10 extra, basically blank slides at the end. And on those slides, I went into the notes layout and I set it to vertical because you can do that. And then I just designed my handouts there. So it was an all-in-one package and I could just export it as, I basically exported two PDFs, but it was just all in one file.
The notes page formatting, if that could bring its game up a few steps, that would be so much more usable.
I agree.
I think it's kind of a hidden feature. I bet a lot of people listening have never even looked at it, or if they have, it's just been the very generic. You can format some things, but not enough. Yeah, just a side note.
Go ahead, Sandy.
No, I think I've used it a lot. Like you, Nolan, I use it for like training manuals. I highly customize it. It's a hidden secret that, mm-hmm, like you said, Troy, if Microsoft would just, I don't know, it's a hidden jewel. I think they need to.
And it's and a hidden limited jewel. It has very, very temperamental. Yeah.
It's designed to be basically a companion for the on-screen slide. So for any on-screen slide, you can go in and then customize the notes page to be sort of the handout version of that slide. But as we said, you could just, you know, print out and only use the notes layout if you wanted in certain cases.
Okay, so I think we made it through one topic using PowerPoint for print design. Right, another topic. And by the way, what we did is we just everybody brainstormed their list of topics and we're just throwing them out there and talking about them.
Exactly.
All right, so how about video?
Oh, okay.
So video, I've said, as of the last few versions, said that PowerPoint can be used as a poor man's video editor.
Absolutely.
And just like the print layout people, you know, are going to get incensed when they say, oh, InDesign's is what you use. Well, yeah, of course, Final Cut, Premiere, what you use, you know, professionally. But if you just need to string a couple of video segments together or crop something out or, you know, just do some very quick editing, you can use PowerPoint simply by, you know, dropping, let's say, three videos on three slides, maybe cropping one of them, you know, on the third one, and then exporting the whole thing as an MP4. And there you go.
Absolutely. We use video. I mean, the video capabilities of PowerPoint are something that is great. And the export of video quality has been, well, the new version 2016, they've now made 1080. So 1920 by 1080 true HD output available and MP4 format. The earlier versions were a little more limited and the format was not one I would have recommended for high-end video use. There was an add-in by Sham that allowed you to kind of do a little higher res output on the earlier version. So if you're on 2013, you can actually get 1080p video. You just have to add run and add in. But so for video, I will say we've actually replaced, we've used it in place of After Effects for a couple of projects. And we have a couple of just great After Effects designers on staff, but we create like infographic style videos right in PowerPoint because one, the authoring was so much easier and quicker, and it was kind of novel and fun to do it. I'll put a more practical one out there. Last Christmas, I spent the time with my sister's family out in Colorado. We did a family day of sledding and having fun before we went up onto the slopes and went skiing and stuff. I made the entire video there that we posted on Facebook in PowerPoint. I just, that night I opened up and grabbed a few videos. So I combined video segments. I combined still photography, which I used Morph to move around in some cool ways, added some text overlays. You know what? I will post it. I will make a, let's see, this comes out. I will make this the blog post that comes out the day after we go live here. I will set that up. So it's going to be a personal one. It's going to be a family ski trip. You can see my sister and my kids and everything else, but it was all done in PowerPoint, and it's, you can do some true video development as well as, just running videos.
You mentioned Morph, and that is huge now. You can put together, I put together this sort of explainer video for a client's new piece of online software, and we just sort of moved icons around very easily, exported it as an MP4 at the end, and he ran it in his trade show booth.
Perfect. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm trying to think of something I can publicly show. So therefore the family gets shown. But we use PowerPoint's export to video or video creation. Sandy, do you use it? I mean, we use it a lot.
I don't use the export video as often, but I do use, it's kind of the opposite, screen capture. You can use PowerPoint to screen capture. And I did describe this in a previous podcast, but there is an insert screen recording option in PowerPoint, and it allows you to record what you're creating on the screen.
Oh, okay.
You can also do voiceover at the time. So it's great for training, I think, or video blogs, that type of thing. But
I thought you were going to say the exact opposite, because I actually just did think of one. I'm going to hold on the screen capture thing. You can actually put a video into PowerPoint, find the frame of the video you want a picture of, and in PowerPoint, click, use this as the poster frame. Then you can export that as a picture. So you can actually use it to get images out of a video. Hadn't thought about that till right now, but I mean, it's just another use of video.
You're right. I misspoke when I started this.
But you're right. You're doing a screen capture of your desktop where you're creating the video that's going to be turned into a training module, correct?
Exactly.
Just different use of the exact same term. But I think it's not what PowerPoint was made for. We're not making a presentation. The whole point of this conversation.
Exactly. So moving on, I would like to talk about vector graphics. We've had our podcast on creating vectors, and you two are very, very adept at Illustrator and InDesign. I use PowerPoint almost exclusively to build vector graphics. And the other tools as needed. And a very recent example is I created an animation, a complex animated graphic for a PowerPoint presentation. But that same graphic had to be used in video work, in print materials. So I built that graphic in such a way that it could be exported as an EMF and then imported and converted to an EPS or an SVG in Illustrator. And now I've done this work at a smaller level in the past, but this was a big deal, so I sent it to the expert, Troy.
We did. It's a perfect example, because in this case you did develop a poor presentation work, but the end use that we saw was you said, "Hey, I got to turn this over to some video guys," and they're probably throwing, because they want a vector, so they're probably going to throw it into After Effects and apply some what we would call animation effects. It's really, really completely functional in that respect.
I think I mentioned before, we had done all these icons for a client, like over 100, and developed them partly in Illustrator, partly in PowerPoint, also some we'd already had pieces. And then, down a month later, they said, "Oh, can we have the Illustrator files, so we can use them elsewhere?" And I said, "No, weren't really created that way." So we just exported a PDF, opened in Illustrator, cleaned a few things up. And now we had Illustrator files.
Oh, That's, I never thought of doing it that way. So you saved the presentation as a PDF.
Yep. And okay. It will save, if you go PowerPoint to PDF, anything that is vector will stay vector, which means you can then open it in Illustrator.
Mm-hmm.
And,
there's some color space issues. There's some grouping issues that you always want to look for, depending on who's going to get it, because you don't want to give what might be called bad art files. But it does it really well. I would say, I don't think we're creating vector graphics for use outside of PowerPoint much, but we do lots of vector image design in PowerPoint, as opposed to starting in Illustrator, developing it there, and then importing it into PowerPoint. Just because the tools have improved so much, we've really reduced our external application design time. We're not using Illustrator nearly as much as, I'll just say, in the past. You know, because now we've got the shape merge and all the tools associated with that. You can right click on graphics and you can get edit points and, you know, Bezier curve type of tools are not nearly as friendly as working in Illustrator, but we just do more and more stuff right in PowerPoint. So we're doing our vector design in PowerPoint for presentation projects, or it might be a print document or anything else. But yeah, I think vector graphics is a perfect one, Sandy. And you're like the queen of that, because you're the first person I ever saw do a talk on creating icons, kind of like you just talked about, Nolan, but I saw it from Sandy first, within PowerPoint. You know, it was like, hey, I created my icon set for this client right here. It's like, that's pretty darn cool. I would have never even, you know, my workflow at that point was, let's just open it up in Illustrator, develop them all, and get them in there.
Yeah, it was a lot faster for me to do it in PowerPoint.
Okay, so I'm going to come back to the kind of video concept here, but lower thirds. Does everybody know what a lower third is? May I should explain it really quick? Actually, no. Anyways, it's like when you're watching the news and they have the little ticker tape along the bottom, or you're watching an award show, or like the, what do we just have? Do we just have the Grammys? Not the Grammys, Oscars, right? We just had our Oscar parties within a month or so. I'm totally out of the loop on this. But you know, when the main, entertainment comes on stage, they put a band across the bottom of the screen. It's the lower third of the screen, and they say, you know, here's the title or the song, or here's their name, you know, things like that. So we use PowerPoint to develop lower thirds for live show events all the time. PowerPoint is a much faster tool for editing and even calling up lower third overlays. So we rely on some external equipment to make it happen. You know, we just tell the, we can run 255 green and tell them to alpha out the rest of our slide, or we just tell them to crop it down if it's going to be a nice rectangle, no gradients or semi-transparencies, I should say. We can just have them chop it so they're literally only displaying a portion. But we use this instead of a lot of video systems.
Yeah, and even if you're not, you know, running stuff live and you have a video and you want to put, you know, the person's name and title, you know, like they would on TV, just bring up the video, throw a little text box under there. You can animate it. You can fade out part of it. You can put a gradient on it. You can make it look pretty good. And then, yeah, again, just export the video again.
Oh, that's a perfect example.
You could also just annotate video. Like, you know, if you want to circle something on a video as it's happening, or, you know, put an arrow into something, or even shade out part of a video it's running, you can do all that kind of stuff. And you can do that based on timing of the animation, or you can also, to get really in the weeds, you can set trigger points on the video. So again, not going to go too much into this, but you can basically say, once the video gets to this part and you have a slider, you can say, launch this animation, launch that lower third. And when it gets to this part, take it away. Export your video, and there you have it.
So just like the notes editing, triggers on videos could use some improvement too. It's such a powerful feature that's just
and also
so temperamental.
Hidden and unknown.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's very, very cool.
So I used PowerPoint recently to when I was doing something in InDesign, and the client said, we're much more comfortable making edits in PowerPoint, or making, you know, giving you notes and marking up the document. So can you send us the PowerPoint version?
And you started in InDesign, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And we had discussed this will be InDesign. But then I realized, oh, okay, yeah, fine. I had explained there's no PowerPoint version, but I will convert it to PowerPoint by using Acrobat. Made a PDF, brought up Acrobat, export to PowerPoint. And then it was very easy for them to make text edits and highlight them appropriately, and put in little sticky notes. They were just more comfortable in PowerPoint, even though you could really do the same thing in Acrobat. It was easier for them to just wow. move things around. And so they did send it back to me, and I looked at the notes and made the changes in InDesign.
Wow, that's good. That's a great idea. My story is I use it for storyboarding. PowerPoint.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. You can see a storyboard when you put a PowerPoint presentation into Slide Sorter View. There's that. But I've literally, when creating, starting to create a presentation for somebody, I've created grayscale versions of slides without content on them. Then I export it to Word using PowerPoint's Export to Word, or now I think it's called Handout feature, where you end up with getting, you have a slide next to the written content, the description. And mm-hmm. so I've been able to very successfully use that for storyboarding.
Storyboarding is a big term as well. It's kind of like PowerPoint. It can be used anything. We use PowerPoint. I use PowerPoint to develop storyboarding all the time. I mean, it's a great, great tool for this because just like you're saying, Nolan, usually it's because the other people we're working with, they can edit in PowerPoint as opposed to sending out PDF. I actually prefer a PDF workflow in many instances, but they're either not using true Acrobat, so they can't do notations as easy. But anyway, so we use
you can't do notations in Reader, but not everybody's familiar with it.
And actually, I don't know if I knew that. So
that might be a relatively recent.
It's people that are, you know, a lot update. Of Mac-based people. The default is to open up with the Mac PDF reader, and that thing
preview.
Is just
that's terrible.
Is that what it is? Yeah, yeah, and it's just so limited. Also on mobile phones. Right. You know, there's just very limited ability to even see the notes. So
people will even view PDFs in browsers.
Yes,
there are lots of ways to view
limitation. PDFs. Again, yeah. A limitation. So I would say we use PowerPoint to map out website projects when we're developing. We actually create our initial wireframe in PowerPoint because we say, okay, here's the navigation we're looking at. Here's the content. It's more for the content flow to say, okay, you fill in the, you know, what you're looking for here. So we know before we really delve into it, we know the scope of this. Video projects, we storyboard out videos. You know, we're going to look at this scene. Then we're going to have a voiceover narration over this scene. So we'll use PowerPoint there. You know, we even use it for presentation projects, which is sort of kind of an inception thing. We're using PowerPoint to map out a PowerPoint presentation.
Exactly. No, that makes perfect sense.
Oh, you know, the other one? I got one other one. Hold on. And this is a very, very niche thing, but I map out all the presets and stage options for our larger shows. So just a couple of weeks ago, we were on site in Dallas. It was a fantastic event. It was three separate screens. So it wasn't like a big ultra wide screen, but it was three separate screens. And there was some downstage monitors and there was some logo areas, digital logo areas. So before the meeting, I actually created a PowerPoint document where it just kind of had indicators. It gave everybody the same name. So we all knew what left, center, and right was, depending on which, if you're backstage or front of house, we just labeled them on there. And I said, this is preset one is the theme look. Preset two is the PowerPoint across all looks. Preset three is PowerPoint in the center and IMAG on the outboard. You know, we created this whole list of all the presets again. And then I handed it off to the producer who said, oh, I need this, or I want this number to be this. Modified it really quickly, and we sent out a PDF to the entire crew. So everybody had this kind of visual of every type of look we could use. So that is a storyboard. It's a preset list, and we did it all in PowerPoint. I could have authored it really in anything, but PowerPoint was so much easier. Exported as a PDF. Nobody got a PowerPoint file for this one. The end result was a PDF.
I'm not sure what the current trend is, but a few years ago, people were using Keynote a lot for prototyping mobile apps.
Oh, yeah.
So much so that somebody came out with like a Keynote prototyping kit that had all these, you know, predefined layouts and icons and things that people could just sort of plug and play to again, prototype the UI of their apps.
There is a PowerPoint add-in that it's the exact same company. It's a prototyping app and I tested it. It doesn't really apply to us. It's just not our world at this point any longer. But, yeah, you can, again, Was the export of that one to send a PDF or to actually send the slides? When I've seen it, it's to send the slides and let end users modify and say, no, this is what I really want, because that just...
Oh, I guess that could happen too. I mean, I assume most people were outputting PDFs.
Interesting. We do them as videos too. Actually, now that I think about it, we kind of prototype different things and we export a video so they can kind of see things in motion a lot of times. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure you use PowerPoint in show situations for stuff as well, right?
Oh, yeah, we do. So when you're on a show, when you're backstage, when you're on crew, you get what's called the... what do you call a show caller list? Oh, my gosh. You get a cue sheet. Yeah, you get a run list, you get a cue sheet, you get something that says this is going to happen and this is everything that needs to happen technically to make this event happen. I use PowerPoint because we're usually controlling a slide deck that, you know, the master show deck has everything in it. I put a lot of hidden slides. So for show cues, we'll put in a hidden slide that says they're all color coded. So red is a presenter slide. So I can quickly skim through a 300-400 slide deck that's going to be used throughout a day and find that presenter's name visually, just because it's a big, bold, red, hidden slide with their name big. Mm-hmm. It'll give us things like how much time should be on the speaker timer for them. I do hidden slates for video so I can quickly find video names and how long they're going to run. So yeah, I actually use them I kind of create my own little show cue list right inside the slide deck.
Okay. So mine is a little different. I guess you can call it a show cue, but it's not a show. It's, for example, I've created countdown timers or timers that are used maybe more so in a training environment. So it's not behind the scenes. The presenter is actually using a timer that I've created in PowerPoint. So it is a presentation, but it counts down. I've made them for as short as 1 minute up to an hour with buzzers and warning signs. And
is the audience seeing that or only the presenter?
It's different. The audience is seeing it.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. But again, you're not creating slides. You're creating a countdown.
Exactly.
I've seen it used as a separate deck, for the teleprompter speaker notes. Just run off a different feed entirely.
We do that, unfortunately, all the time. There's a great name for that. What did you call it when you did it?
I never did it personally. I've seen it. I always end up convincing people to use the speaker
real teleprompter system. I have a trick for getting around that. And Troy, you probably already do it. But I have to do it all the time. I used to do two separate presentations. And then you had to coordinate the animation clicks and all that.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Now,
oh, yeah.
I take the original presentation. I duplicate it. Then I put a black text box over each slide so that when I indicate a click, it's all the clicks are on that same slide. Are you following me?
Oh, yeah, yes. I am very much so.
So you don't have to create multiple. I've simplified it anyway. It's gone. I use it all the time. I hate to use it, but I have to.
I find a lot of events, it's hard to budget a true teleprompt person and equipment because only one presenter wants it. But, you know, then there's a budget thing. I personally prefer a teleprompter always be there because they can do everything from send notes out to help presenters. They really truly help presenters. They modify the scripts so it comes across well. All teleprompters that I work with, they're very good at communication. They're very good at let's make this so it sounds correct and accurate. So Nolan, so what we call it when we're going to run notes to a presenter, you know, a teleprompt system is going to be, you know, this nice flowing script. People read it. It's broken up. We call it power prompter. It's PowerPoint prompting. So we'll do, we'll do power prompter for you. Yeah, just did it last week. As a matter of fact, I had a second graphics person. That was their primary job for handling that. So yeah, we use it for that. So I guess a whole other use of PowerPoint. It's building slides, but it is not for anybody to see, but the presenter.
Right.
Game shows. Okay. This is or just games. Anybody create games with PowerPoint?
Yeah. I haven't done it in a long time, but I've done a few. I did like a Who Wants to Be a Millionaire game where, you know, things appear and disappear and boxes open and stuff. And it's kind of a fun puzzle to put together and figure out how to sequence things, how to hyperlink things.
Hyperlinks are just... they have some true power when you start figuring out how to use them. Mm-hmm. The new ones, what do you call the brand new ones? The new version of custom shows?
There's a new version of custom shows?
Zoom.
Zoom.
When you when you use Zoom, which is basically just custom shows, but it's pre-built and it does the landing machine. Doing custom, we're doing a customized Jeopardy game show right now, and it's really, really cool. We have pre-built versions of most game shows out there over the years, and we also, you know, I would say, I don't know if this is a separate topic or not, but I'll just throw it under games, is audience response systems, ARS, they can be done in PowerPoint. So we do a lot of audience response. Hey, what? Tell us what you think. Is your division, how's your division doing this quarter? And, you know, the ABC. But we also do a lot of games, specifically from the Turning Point system. I think their keypads and their software is the most robust. We do a lot of what you call, not bar tab, What do you call the game when you're like bar tab trivia?
Oh,
hey Lori. She just did one. I'm trying to think. So we use Turning Point systems especially for I think it's called a bar tab trivia. I can't think of the proper name here, but you know, it's who not only can get the answer but who can answer it quickest. And so that system does it really well. So again, it's not a presentation, but we're doing it in PowerPoint in this case for the audience. But yeah, we did.
I don't do game. I don't haven't ever been asked to create a game. Yeah, I'm kind of lucky, I guess.
It gets expensive because trigger animations are a slow process.
Well,
but it's really cool. I mean, we've done some really cool ones.
Yeah, I've seen some great ones out there.
And every year, for those who haven't been, the Presentation Summit does a very involved. Jeopardy.
Yeah, it's a Jeopardy.
Well,
it's
Jeopardy like.
It's Jeopardy with Who Wants to Be a Millionaire with the Lifelines.
Match game.
Yeah, it's the Rick Altman special. It's kind of cool how he just matches them all in there.
And I have the privilege of running that, but I...
Oh, really?
Well, that's what I do each year. I sit and click buttons, basically. But I've never really had the opportunity to create a game. Now, so switching subjects a little bit, though, this reminds me of what I do, and it's another use for PowerPoint. Each year, I create a holiday greeting card.
Oh, yeah.
In PowerPoint.
They're beautiful.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I do it as a gift, I guess, to my clients first, but anyone who wants to can have access to it. And the beauty of PowerPoint is I designed this in such a way that they can customize it. So they can take it in turn. They have permission to send it to whomever they like.
I guess greeting cards then, animated greeting cards.
Yes.
We do that as well every year. We just have a team one. So everybody on the team gets to highlight a winter theme and we stitch them all together. And we actually just do a video export. We're not, I guess, nice like you and give it away. But it's a fun, we give everybody actually 20 hours of log time to build out their segments. So it's gotten pretty elaborate over the years. So yeah, let's put greeting cards on there as well.
Exactly.
Animated greeting cards.
Mm-hmm.
What else we got? Oh, I got one. I'll jump in. When you're on a corporate event, we're doing a live show. There's just so many requests, and PowerPoint's already in the system. Sometimes it's Keynote. I think PowerPoint pretty much dominates the corporate show setting now for us, anyways. And you just get the requests. So I've got one that may or may not have been used before by anybody else, but I call it live audience capture. So people, you know, a presenter wants to do a brainstorming session with the audience of 50 or 500, whatever. And so we think of it as kind of a digital notepad that the entire audience can see. So I run an extended desktop. So we have a slideshow going out there and I have the editable slide in front of me on my monitor. And hopefully I have somebody from the company over my shoulder making sure what I'm typing is accurate. But we literally get the feedback. We type it in and it just pops up on the screen and then we reorder it. And so, yeah, we do this live audience capture thing. So it is not a pre-built slide in any way. And I think the easiest way is think of it as a brainstorming session. We've done a lot of other things with it as well in games, show type environments. But that's kind of another use of PowerPoint that is definitely never anticipated by the design team, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's another use that I think is going to become even more popular with the advent of Zoom and those features. It's the touchscreen information board. Nolan, do you ever head to that?
I was just talking with a client about it. We talked for a couple of weeks and the project's not going to happen, unfortunately. Oh. But yeah, they wanted to do a huge interactive touchscreen to show agenda topics and maps of, you know, a show floor and everything. And so we just have call after call about basically can't, you know, they didn't, there are more professional pieces of software that do touchscreen type stuff, but they didn't want to go down that road. They just wanted to use PowerPoint, and they kept asking, you know, can it do this? Can it do this? And I said, sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it's basically hyperlinks, and, you know, can we have it after a while, you know, go back to the home screen? It's like, yeah, sure. You know, we'll just set, you know, we'll set timings after, you know, 60 seconds, it goes back to this certain slide. And I was actually really looking forward to doing it because it sounded really fun, but
It does sound fun. I haven't had the opportunity recently. As a matter of fact, it's been, I bet at least 5 years since I've done something that would be perfect for it today. It was an interactive DVD at the time for Kellogg's and their in-school breakfast program. And that was all created in PowerPoint, 5 modules with interactive menus, self-running, interactive quizzes. It would have been great to be able to do that now with Zoom and
Touch
screens.
Well, you know, along those lines, digital signage. I can think of 2 instances. One was we were overseas doing an event there, and this is pretty common now, but it was pretty funny. It was overseas, and there was a language barrier trying to figure out what it is the request was. But the request was is every room has a little digital placard in front of it. But it wasn't just words. It was a full 800x600 pixel area. So we designed everything in PowerPoint and exported them as JPEGs, but we had labeled them all so the naming would make sense of which room, because there was like 30 some breakout rooms. So we did all the digital signage design, and it almost became a full-time job because every day these 30 plus rooms would rotate around the building. So they wanted to map it out with who was presenting and the times, and done in like 3 languages. And so we did that. The other one we do every year, and there's a couple of really good photos of this on our Facebook page and or on the blog. I'm not sure where you'd find them, but we do where you take a large plasma or flat panel display, you know, 16x9, 50, 60 inch, and you rotate it so it becomes tall orientation. And we put out the agendas, we put out important notes, and they just run as a slideshow loop. Usually we just export the PowerPoint as JPEGs. We drop those onto a USB key, and most of the new displays will just run a slideshow off of images. We create our digital signage all authored in PowerPoint at these, you know, just different aspect ratios.
Yeah, you'll see that sometime every once in a while in a hotel lobby. Somebody will, you know, have hit the keyboard or something, and you'll see, you know, the notes the layout mode, and you're like, oh, it's PowerPoint. Or you'll see some really bad transitions, and you're like,
that's what I was going to say.
Oh, they're using PowerPoint.
I was just in Dallas. We were going down to the West End to go eat dinner as a group, and we're walking back to the hotel, and on a brick wall, so you're standing at a stoplight right next to the floating memorial, and on a brick wall right across the street was somebody had put up it was a advertisement for everything happening at the West End. It was different, as far as I could tell from what I saw. It was, you know, the different restaurants and different community events, but it was just PowerPoint. I knew it instantly because of the transitions used. It's like, they were using glitter, and they were using the vortex transition, and it was just all these really jarring transitions that just didn't quite go with this nice, cool brick wall feel. But yeah, digital signage is probably a big use of PowerPoint. Now, again, that is kind of creating a slide, but I don't think that was, it's not a presentation slide.
Right.
Okay, PowerPoint is not just PowerPoint. It's not just presentation slides. It's an application that has so many applications. I mean, I think that's one of its powers, is it's so versatile. You can create and use, and it's expanded over the years. I mean, all the video editing capabilities as well as video playback has definitely changed just in the past few years. A lot of the vector design tools have just been added in the last few years, so suddenly it's being used more and more. I think PowerPoint has a great future just because it's not a niche program. It just has so many different areas and fun uses for it to meet so many different demands. So it was just a fun conversation, and I'm sure as soon as we're done, we'll start thinking of more and more and more, and we'll have to create an episode 2 at some point in the future. Hey, thanks for joining us. Okay, Q&A corner. And this one's more of a listener out there. Thank you so much for sending us something that I don't know if I would have found. This is pretty darn cool. It directly relates to our typography episodes, I would say two of them. And let me just read this really quick. This is from, oh my gosh, Pauline Leroux. Is that what I'm going to say? R-U-T-T-E. Leroux. Leroux?
I'll buy it.
Wait, it's not French. It's Netherlands. Pauline, thank you so much. Based out in the Netherlands. And this is a really, really cool thing. I'm a big fan of your podcast. I always listen during my daily walk. Keep a smile on my face. You share a lot of great information, very relaxing and have fun together way. I found a nice short game for non-designers about kerning. So that was very interesting right there. I will put the link to this in the show notes because everybody's got to go check this out. I'm a presentation trainer and sometimes help people with their presentation slides. So I'm always interested in design work and the work that you three do. So here is what it is. It's called type. Well, the URL is type.method.ac. And for the life of me, I don't know what AC stands for right now as a domain, but it's called Kern Type. It's a kerning game. It's so great. You open it up and you literally have to click on the letter that's in the wrong spacing and you nudge it over to the proper place. And when it gets there, it says, congratulations. Then it goes to the next one. So I'm looking at the next one. You click on a letter and you basically just kind of keep moving them around. It's just a visual trainer. I'm convinced that some design school professor created this as a way to like kind of quickly show what kerning can and can't do or what is proper and not so helpful to the audience. It's a really, really cool little game. So thank you, Pauline. It's something I would have never found. I'm going to put it in our show notes and it's also scheduled to be a blog post on the PowerPoint blog. Anybody else? Did you guys play with it? It's really fun.
Yeah, I did.
Didn't you tweet it?
Oh yeah, I tweeted out. It's fun. It's a cool little interactive thing you can play.
Hey, well let's talk about pro or tech tips. Nolan, Troy, do you either of you have an idea?
Sure, I got one. Okay. We've talked about a number of like hidden or lesser known things today, and here's one that not a lot of people know about. You can set a default table style for your presentation. Don't get too excited because it's limited. Mm-hmm. But if you, and this is only, you can only do this on the PC, cannot do this on the Mac, but you'll know under, you know, if you insert a table, you'll have all those default Microsoft default styles from the gallery that you can pull down. And some are pretty bad. Some are, you know, mm-hmm. decent. But if you want in your file to have a default table set, you can select one of those. It has to be one of those. You can't customize your own, but you can set one of those. And then if you click it and then right click, you have to right click on one of the tables in the gallery. You'll have the option for set as default. So sometimes what we'll do with clients is in templates, we'll basically make one of those the default template style. Or if we want, if they really want a better looking, more designed table, we'll do that for them. But then there's also the option. There's basically two options for them. Like if you just want the down and dirty and, you know, when somebody makes a table, it at least uses the right color, if not the right grid lines, we'll set that as the default. And then they can manually, you know, update and make a better looking table. But yeah, so you can make kind of a default table style.
I'll do the same thing, Nolan. I will, in my template, set the default table, and I will insert a slide with that default table on it saying, this is your default table. It will automatically appear when you insert a table. Next slide is, however, if you want something more customized, this is a little harder to work with, but it's yours. You have an option to work with it. So I think that's great. I think every template needs to contain that information.
Yes. Yeah. That's now if we just get that for bar charts and
yes.
Charts in general.
Oh my gosh, I know. Well,
okay, different topic. Sorry, yep, just totally derailed that segment. Pro or tech tip, Sandy?
Yeah, mine is not PowerPoint related, but having just returned from London, we...
So jealous.
It was just an wonderful awesome looking trip. But what we were able to do with our ATT telephone subscription was buy an add-on that allows us in those international countries that are included, which is a lot. It's very, very global. But I will pay $10 a day Once I use data in a foreign country to access unlimited data.
So, unlimited?
Yes,
wow.
Just awesome. So I was able to, let's say day two, I didn't open my phone. I wouldn't be charged that $10. Day three, I made a phone call or I checked a Facebook. I would get charged that flat $10 rate for that day.
You know, I saw that. You have to do the math, because if you're going to be gone for a week and using it every day, then you can get a cheaper plan than for the $70 for that week. But if you're if you don't do it every day, or if you're only gone for a couple of days, then it's good. It makes sense.
Exactly. So next time I fly internationally, like Canada, which I forgot was another country the last time I went there.
You did bring your passport, right?
They love hearing that.
No, I did. But, you know, the whole telephone thing I wasn't prepared for. I could have, if I went there tomorrow, I'd be able to.
And as I learned, if you're in parts of Detroit on the water, you start roaming.
Oh.
Which is, yeah, that hit me. I was at a conference in Detroit looking out like at Canada, but clearly in the U.S. And it kept wanting to put me on whatever that SkyTel or whatever it is over there.
Okay, so mine is, you know, I'm gonna have a tip kind of based on what something Nolan said, is that how he chains three videos together and then exports them as a new video. During slideshow mode, this is something we do for a lot of our executive presentations where they're just running their own presentation, smaller meeting, we design it. We do an auto advance on the slides that have videos, so it doesn't sit at, you know, video ends in black. You don't want the screen to be black. The video ends on a bad freeze frame because it'll freeze in the last frame, and the frame is, you know, you trimmed it and it's got, you know, the person with the bad facial expression. So we do an auto advance. So we literally just set the slide to transition after 3 seconds. It doesn't matter if the video is 10 seconds or 10 minutes. It'll pause and wait until the end of the video, and then it instantly advances to the next slide. And usually we just put in a theme graphic or the company logo at that point so that there's something on the screen that is kind of ambiguous, and the presenter can have their final comments about the video, say, hey, wasn't that great, gather their thoughts, and then they click to the next slide. So we do an auto advance on video slides almost always.
Any reason for 3 seconds and not 0 seconds?
Sometimes, yes, I would definitely recommend it being longer than 2 seconds, because depending on the computer and the video file format being used, it's sometimes going to offload it to an external player. So we've had some slower computers are going to offload an MOV to QuickTime player. It actually didn't load the video quick enough, and it just advanced to the next slide. I wouldn't call it a bug. I would just say it's a bad computer. It didn't have enough processing power. So we usually do 3 seconds. It's just kind of, we just literally have a preset animation. We just click in a, you know, it's just our standard. A lot of people think they need to, you know, if it's a 1 minute video, they think they need to time it so that the slide transitions at 61 seconds, a minute and second. Yeah. But no, it's really
that's actually more dangerous, because timing isn't always perfect.
Yeah.
And 61 seconds might not actually be 61 seconds, and the video might whatever. So, but yeah, but that's why I love this podcast, because I've always done 0 seconds and never, I mean, clearly I haven't had as much experience with that stuff as you, but knowing that extra 3 seconds because of the video player, that could have been bad.
Great tip.
Yeah. So it's a small little thing. It's great.
This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a design studio team focused on presentation design. If you're looking for presentation design, messaging, or show site graphics ops that are real presentation designers, check us out at www.tlccreative.com and the blog at thepowerpointblog.com. And we're at Facebook.com/TLC Creative.
This is Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com, for lots of free downloads and goodies and stuff on presentation and data visualization. And if you're interested in on-site presentation or data viz training, give me a call, or you can drop by nolanhamescreative.com for more info.
This is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz. You can visit my new website at presentationwiz.biz. My blog at PPT Wiz blog, or the Presentation Guild at presentationguild.org. Or just search for Sandra Johnson PowerPoint in your web browser and you'll learn all kinds of things about me.
And I'm looking at your new website right now. Very cool.
Thanks.
Ooh, look at all the examples.
Well, we're building more examples. There's really not enough on there, but working on it. I just had to get something updated. Oh, you're nice. Thank you. Nice. I need more examples. Thank you.
With that, we'll see you at the next episode. Thanks.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.